Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 28 of Devour the Podcast. I am your host, David, and along with me is Jamie.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back for yet another episode. This week we're doing a couple of trauma films, Poltergeist and The Toxic Avenger, because, I don't know, why did we pick trauma movies this week?
It started with Poltergeist, and then we were looking for something for the feature presentation, and then you suggested Toxie.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Which, you know, so then we just sort of turned it into a trauma episode.
Yes.
So.
Which will be fun because I love trauma. Last week we had, I did the guest spot with you and Mike and Ted from SlasherCast for Evil episodes.
That's right. And that should be dropping very soon. People will be able to hear that, and that was a lot of fun.
Yep, that was
one of my favorite middle fingers joined the show.
Yes, that was a lot of fun to do, although we started super late, and trying to get that thing corralled into actually recording was a kind of a nightmare. Holy shit. It's like we couldn't manage to stay on topic long enough to start recording, because we kept going off on some random tangent about something else, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's the dangers of podcasting. Yeah. Especially when it's your show, you can, you know, you end up just wandering all over.
Yeah. And you just were on the last episode of Electric Chair.
I was. That's right. It was Corey invited Evil Dave from Inside Outcast, as well as me, to join him in a discussion about Return of the Living Dead. And that was a really fun one.
Yeah, I've heard most of it. I haven't finished that episode yet. But
also this past Thursday, which for our listeners will be tomorrow, but, you know, by the time they hear it on Saturday.
Yeah.
Also, this past Thursday, the episode of Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts that I was on aired, and or should have. and that was a lot of fun. And that one is pure discussion about Jaws. From it, we talked about the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. And then the second half of the show, we're dissecting Exorcist, you know, pea soup to cassock. Yeah. It's just, or cossack.
No, you're right. It was cassock.
Is it cassock? Okay. And that was a lot of fun, too. So, I don't know. Check it out. This show's good anyway. This is the second episode.
I know. I saw it pop up on Facebook. He said it was the second episode should be up, but it hasn't popped up in my iTunes yet, so.
Well, did he say that today?
No, it was yesterday.
Well, see, it was supposed to come out yesterday.
Ah, okay.
But he decided he wanted to listen to it some more and tweak it and listen to it some more. This is only his second episode, right. So he's, like, really detail-oriented right now. And, but, I mean, he does a great job, and he's really proud. I haven't heard it yet, but he's really proud of this episode and says that it's, you know, way better in production than his first episode was. And his first episode wasn't bad at all.
Actually,
I urge everyone to check it out and check out the site. I enjoy it. I talk about it a lot, but it's because it's a fun site, you know.
And for a first episode, his first episode was really impressive. So I understand from a production side of things that, like, it never sounds as perfect as you want it to. But just listening to it, I was like, God damn, for a first episode, this is really fucking good.
Yeah, it was good. Did you, were you over there going, when he was talking about Stiglitz, were you over there going, Tarantino, like, because I was. Because he was talking about the actor Hugo Stiglitz.
Oh, yeah.
And who was in Nightmare City. I mean,
it was a character in Nightmare City.
Was it Nightmare
City?
Yeah. And then of course Tarantino just referenced that in Inglourious Bastards. So I'm over here going, Tarantino, someone mentioned that. And then
they
eventually did. So yeah. But that was fun. That was fun to listen to.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I guess that's probably it for my wanderings around. I hear that you're going to be coming back to visit us very soon on Evil Episodes.
Yes, Mike is talking about unveiling a new segment, which was something we had talked about doing for this show as a a series of episodes, which we'll probably still do at some point. But we'll be talking about a movie that is very near and dear to my heart that I was so fucking excited when it came out on DVD a couple years ago. And I'm not going to spoil what it is yet, but we're going to do it on this show anyway because I fucking love it. So I bought it on DVD as soon as it became available because it was fucking, it's a fucking awesome movie. And actually, I remember when I worked at Blockbuster, I had a customer who came in wearing a shirt from the movie that only people who've seen the movie would get, would understand the reference from. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, your shirt is awesome. And she's like, thank you. I got it at this, you know, special screening. I was like, son of a bitch, that's awesome. So yeah, but we'll talk about that later. I want to say thank you to Cindy and Stacy from Creepy Kitsch. They mentioned us on their most recent episode.
Oh, very awesome. I haven't gotten to hear it. I am so far behind. No. Still, it is so hard to catch up. I finally got to listen to Corpse Cast, and the last one, and that
the Killer Nun,
and then Slasher Cast, and I'm just and then Electric Chair.
Yeah, I end up fast forwarding through a good chunk of Slasher Cast this week because I was just like, okay, you guys are just going nuts on Tall Man. I don't want to listen to you, Nick, losing his mind.
That rant was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was. I was just like, damn, just breathe, Nick. Just breathe. It's okay. Okay.
I know he gets all worked up,
and I completely understand it. I mean, I get that way too sometimes, but
no,
I know, right? Shocking.
You do not. Oh, did you see that our good friend Kelly Kyle just watched Mask Maker last night?
Oh, Jesus.
Did you see that?
No,
and I
didn't.
Was like, no, did you not hear our review? And he's like, yeah, that's exactly why I'm watching it. I have to see how bad it is. And I was like, that's the show. That's the one.
That's the one,
you know.
Yeah.
That's the one. And he's like, oh, I know. He's like, I remember. So anyway, he watched it and he's like, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, that movie's terrible.
Yeah, he did not enjoy it. So,
I don't think anybody who's seen it has enjoyed it other than some people, but they seem to be delusional. Anyway, but yes, Creepy Kitsch mentioned us because they were talking about something. Yeah, I think Cindy got us confused with Boys and Ghouls because they did an episode about Something Wicked This Way Comes, and she was talking about that movie, and she thought we had talked about it, but we didn't yet.
Oh, I see.
Because it's not available on Netflix Instant, and I don't have a copy of it. But yes, and I'm going to do a fucking promo for them at some point before the end of this month, because yeah, I told him I would. Oh, I also played the first episode of Walking Dead for Xbox Live on Xbox.
Nice. Yeah, how was it?
It was good. Surprisingly, really good. I wasn't sure. I'd read a couple of reviews of it. I read a preview of it and a review of it in Game Informer, and they were like, "Oh, it's kind of a point and click thing. It's not really your typical kind of setup for a game like that." And I was like, "Okay, that's kind of weird." I enjoyed it though. I enjoyed the story. The characters were interesting to, kind of be around. I like that they actually give you like choices for how you want to handle certain situations.
Right, right.
And
it's like a choose your own adventure.
Exactly. And it plays very much like that. It's got some action moments, but it's much more of a kind of a point and click type of thing, which I wasn't sure was going to work, but it actually ended up playing out really well.
End up in some sort of pit. Whenever I choose my own adventure with punji sticks.
Yeah.
Or in the cave with giant spider.
Yeah. I actually had one of those. It was this kid gets into a haunted castle or something, and he has to like fight monsters. It was great. I don't remember whatever happened to it, but I remember liking that one a lot. But yeah, Walking Dead episode 1 was really fun. I like that your choices actually have an impact on what happens. There's a couple of times where you have to choose who you're going to save because you can't save both characters in a situation. So, and then who you save impacts the rest of the story. And then, when they preview the next episode, which I haven't gotten yet, the stuff that you did in the first episode kind of becomes part of the dialogue in the preview for the second one. And from what Mike said, he said part two is way darker, so I will try and get the...
I love how video games have become so interactive in that it's not just, one path, one way to do it. You have to stand on this rock. You have to face this direction. You have to hold it down and then jump again while you're in the air. they have become rather, much more freeform And things like, I love games that have consequences, like your actions have consequences, like Fable. You know, you can go through the entire game and be like really cool and help everyone and be a goody two shoes. And, or you can go through and just be a total dick. And, you know, then your nickname in the game changes depending on, you know, how much of an ass you are. And, you know, you walk into a town and they'll immediately try to arrest you. And I mean, I don't know. I just think stuff like that is fun. And then, you know, so you want to be bad today. You can play it and be as bad as you want. And then maybe next time you want to play it and be a good character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gives it a lot of versatility. And it gives you a lot of playing options. And it makes you want to explore the world more to see exactly what sort of things you could run across differently, depending on how you have led the game.
Definitely.
And I just think that is one of the coolest things in recent gaming is the fact that you're really that much into the game now.
Oh, yeah. And
we're that much closer to existence.
Oh, that fucking movie. But yeah, like I said, I had some... I kind of wish I'd saved. I had like 800 points sitting on my Xbox, and I kind of wish I'd saved the 400x the extra 400 instead of buying the. Because I ended up buying the extra Splatterhouse challenge maps, and then I bought Walking Dead because I didn't realize Walking Dead. I didn't really think about it, so I wish I'd not bought the Splatterhouse stuff and just bought both episodes of Walking Dead. But it was a lot of fun. They introduced Herschel shows up at the very beginning or relatively early in the game, and the Asian kid whose name escapes me, who what's his name meets in Atlanta in the early episodes. I can't think of his name, but he plays a part in the very beginning. And then what I thought was really interesting at the end of the episode was that they give you a stat breakdown of how your choices matched up with other people's choices. So like, it's like you and I think it was like the one that struck me as most interesting was like, I was like me and 47% of people who played gave this character a gun versus not giving this character a gun, which I thought was kind of weird. I don't want to spoil why you're given the choice to give a character a gun, but it's a moment where I was like, really? Really? Are you people that much of assholes to not do that? Yeah, so that was a fun game, and I'm definitely going to get the rest of the episodes when they come out, once I have a little extra Microsoft points. But that's about it for pre-show stuff that I can think of. Yeah, that's about it. So we're going to go ahead and get into the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
All right, time to dig into the news. Today, first off, I have an MPAA update on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D. Presently, Lionsgate is aiming to release the film on January 4th, and today the MPAA weighed in, giving it an R rating for strong, grisly violence and language throughout. Well, I would certainly hope so.
Yes.
This rating announcement could mean that a trailer is just around the corner. So this film was directed by John Loisenhop. It's a direct sequel to Toby Hooper's first film, and it stars Alexandra Daddario, Tanya Ramon, Sue Rock, Scott Eastwood, Bill Moseley, yay, Gunnar Hansen, yay, Trey Songz, okay, Karam Maliki Sanchez, Sean Sipos, Tom Berry, Paul Ray, and Richard Reel. And, of course, this is the first Leatherface had hit the screen since Platinum Dunces gave us the 2003 remake and then The Beginning, which I did not care for.
Yeah, I know.
There's a reason I call them Platinum Dunces. But this is actually very interesting because today on the Horrorphilia Facebook page, mm-hmm. J. Jason posted the
poster.
The poster for this, and basically called me out.
Yeah, he did.
He basically called me out about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, because I'm always talking about how Jessica Biel's ass is really the only thing worth watching in that movie. Okay, well, that's a little harsh. You know, I actually enjoy the film. I really do. I own it. I've watched it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. What bothers me about it, and there are several things, it being a remake, is just that it's so completely different. You know, I don't really see... Go ahead.
Well, that's kind of the thing. It's like, what's the point? I mean, we've already had the discussion of, you know, remakes and reimagining, reboot, et cetera, basically just, we have this title, this franchise thing, we need to fix it because the last couple sequels suck. What's the point of trying to go back and completely redo what Tobe Hooper did with the first one?
There is no point.
Exactly. But
shouldn't do that. Yes. What they should have done was given us a sequel. Going back and fixing, going back to the beginning does not fix the crap that you've already made, and people aren't going to forget that.
No.
So just give us a sequel. I would have been happy with that. But however, in this movie, it changed the characters completely.
And that's the thing, is that they're basically giving us a sequel, except it's a different version of it. It's a reboot of the franchise and not of the original film. You know, I do kind of get where you're coming from with it, but
the thing is, they completely changed Leatherface in that he now has this, you know, he was born like, I don't know.
The beginning. I think the beginning kind of fucks up everything, because then it's like, oh, we have this unnecessary backstory for Leatherface that we didn't need. I mean, beginning is not a terrible movie. It's not great. I haven't watched it in a while, but
I just thought it was boring. But in the remake, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, she talks about how he had, you know, his face was eaten away, so he has to wear a mask. And
oh, I forgot about that.
And nobody cares about me and my boy, you know.
I completely forgot all about that.
And I don't, you know, don't give him a reason. You know, the rest of the family is just straight up fucked up crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't need a reason. That's not scary. You know, being upset because someone teased you in school is not a scary reason.
No.
And to me, that just deflated the character altogether. Plus, I think that what Tobe Hooper managed to do in the original with no blood, this one, on the other hand, was completely drenched, and it just didn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's the same way I felt about the Amityville Horror remake. I mean, you're practically swimming in blood at the end of that movie. And I just...
Both are remakes I actually enjoy.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I've never seen the original Amityville, just because it's kind of hard to find on like at video stores for some reason. Like, I've never been able to find it handily. Yeah. And I saw the remake because I liked Ryan Reynolds. I still do. And yeah, initially, I was just like, oh, fuck this movie. It's a remake. Bah. This was during my hatred of remake days. And then I was like, oh, it's not a bad movie. It's not great. Yeah, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. I just think it's way... I mean, the ending is stupid. They just completely went all outside. Well, just, you know, watch the original. You'll understand what I mean. I mean, it's like, I don't have a problem with remakes. Mm-hmm. I don't. This is not remake hate. You know, I don't have any of that. I don't hate these movies because they're remakes. I dislike these movies because I dislike these movies.
No, that's understandable.
I dislike, you know, I do love Arlie Ermey in the remake. There are a lot of things I do like about it, but do I think it's all balls out fantastic? No, I don't at all.
Maybe personally, I enjoyed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake for what it is. I don't remember a lot of the storyline elements. I mean, really, for me, it was just like what stands out to me is that awesome opening sequence with the girl blowing her brains out.
Yeah, that was a beautiful shot.
That's a great sequence. Arlie Ermey being awesome because he's awesome in everything.
Right.
And Leatherface being gigantic and running around and fucking people up with a chainsaw. I mean, that's basically what I remember about the movie. And Grandpa had no legs for some reason. But I liked the look of it. Like, I think that they got an interesting look for it. You know, it was, I don't know, it worked for the time period. I don't think it's an amazing film by any stretch. I think it's good for what it is. But, you know, I don't hate it. It could have been a lot worse, and, you know.
Oh, I definitely don't hate it. I've seen it way too many times for me to ever claim that I hate it.
I mean, if I sat down and watched it now, I'm sure I could probably pick out some things that bothered me about it. But from what I remember, I enjoyed it when I saw it. I thought it was pretty good. It was better than what I expected it to be. Mm-hmm. Considering that it was like, you know, this is a quote-unquote remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like, how the fuck are you going to do that? Because Tobe Hooper's original is just, it is what it is. It's perfect. But they did a decent job. So this being a direct sequel to the original doesn't make a lot of sense, because we already had a sequel to the original by Tobe Hooper.
Right.
With, you know, Dennis Hopper running around being crazy. But I mean, Bill Moseley's going to be in it, so that's cool.
Yeah, I certainly won't complain about that.
Yeah, this is the first I really heard that it wasn't Platinum Dunes involved. I'd heard that they were talking about doing Texas Chainsaw 3D, and I was like, okay, so what? Is it Platinum Dunes? Who owns the rights to this? Who's doing what? So, a direct sequel to the original? Okay, fine. Gunnar Hansen's back. That's cool. I don't know if he's going to be Leatherface. I think he's too old to be Leatherface at this point, but...
Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter. He's wearing a face.
But yeah, I mean, I'll wait to see a trailer, and then I'll maybe check it out in the theater if it looks interesting enough, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I try to, well, I mean, I pretty much do keep an open mind about stuff like that until I see it, you know, because I'm definitely not one of those people who are like, you know. No, I give you a chance.
Exactly.
If you mess it up, then I'm angry.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to the next one. The dude behind Last Exorcism is about to, which is Daniel Stamm, who directed it, is pairing up with the producer of Insidious, Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions, for a psychological thriller called Angry Little God. Dimension Films has acquired the project, which will be, in fact, a remake of 13 Game of Death, a Thai film Dimension previously released on DVD under its Dimension Extreme label. IM Global will finance and produce the film alongside Brian Kavanaugh Jones of Automatic and Kiki Miyake. Stamm and his writing partner David Burke adapted the script from the original film, which follows a bright but meek social services coordinator who's drowning in debt and desperate as he's about to marry the love of his life. He receives a mysterious phone call informing him that he's on a hidden camera game show where he must execute 13 tasks to receive a cash prize of over $6 million. He accepts the challenge, but even with thousands of dollars suddenly appearing in his bank account, he realizes he's in over his head. Trapped into the horrors manipulated by unseen spectators, his need to complete the game escalates as the tasks grow more extreme to a devastating point of no return. So Weinstein of Bob said that he was blown away by Daniel Stamm's direction in The Last Exorcism, and they've wanted to work with him ever since. They look forward to bringing his suspenseful Angry Little God to American audiences. There you have it.
Yeah, I haven't seen the original.
I'm not familiar with that. But I mean, it sounds interesting, and I think I'm sure that the Thai film is probably very good.
Yeah.
I don't know about this one, though. I honestly was not a fan of The Last Exorcism.
It was all right.
Didn't enjoy it. Thought it was boring. But, you know,
I kind of liked it. I liked that it wasn't your traditional... I liked that it was more about a... kind of a charlatan. Like, this guy was obviously full of shit, and he was showing them kind of like the tricks of the trade. I kind of enjoyed that element of it. And
yeah,
the idea
true.
That, you know, maybe this is a real demonic possession. And the ending...
That's
the thing was sort of like, oh, that's interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
That's about as much as I went into it. It's like, all right, sure, I guess so. Whatever you say. Whatever.
No, I was like, no! But, you know, like I said, the story for this one sounds interesting enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I just hope it doesn't fall into a trap where it's going to become... like a Saw or like a something. What is the movie I was just talking about with Mike where people are made to do things? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was a Tales from the Dark Side episode because we're covering Tales from the Dark Side right now on Evil Episodes. And one of the episodes that we cover for this one is basically your problem gets taken care of you by someone else, but then in turn you have to take care of someone else's problem. And so, anyway, I'll be interested to see what sort of predicament they get into. But I definitely want to check out the Thai version.
Yeah.
Okay, well, looks like, Warner Brothers has officially passed on developing a multi-tiered adaptation of Stephen King's epic The Dark Tower series. And this is from Variety. It was announced earlier this year that the studio might tackle the massive project after Universal Pictures themselves ended up passing on it last summer. The books weave the saga of Roland Deschaine, the gunslinger, and the adaptation was to be developed as a big screen trilogy and tie-in television series featuring the same cast. Ron Howard was attached to the project to direct at least the first part of the series and would have overseen the rest of the massive adaptation. Most recently, Russell Crowe was said to have been interested in the role of the gunslinger, with Akiva Goldsman and Mark Verheerden tackling the writing duties. Although the property could still theoretically move forward if another studio is interested in picking it up, the current state of affairs appears to be that The Dark Tower, at least in this iteration, is on indefinite hold. Now, I've been hearing people, I mean, they've been talking about that for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of fans, if they do it right, would be very appreciative of it. But, you know, so I don't know. I mean, seems kind of odd to me that it, after all these years, no one has touched it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, honestly, considering we got now going on 6 movies based on Tolkien from Peter Jackson, because he's decided to turn The Hobbit into 3 fucking movies, because we need that. I'm sorry, I'm not a Tolkien fan. I'm just not. I the movies were fine. I like Two Towers the best. Return of the King bored me to tears because it was fucking 5 hours long. And I tried reading the first book, and oh my god, I got to about Tom Bombadil and went, nope, I'm done.
You know, that happens a lot. People get sidetracked at Tom Bombadil, but you either love him or you hate him, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm not really crazy about the character myself. He always just is a distraction. Yeah. But
I mean, I don't hate Tolkien or anything. I'm just not particularly a fan of. The Lord of the Rings movies are fine. I tried to read the books. They bored me to tears. I know a lot of people who really like them are really into them. Mm-hmm. Dark Tower, I've read maybe the first 2 chapters of The Gunslinger. It was interesting, but I never finished it. I've got all of them. I'll probably read them at some point.
That's one that I have never read. There are a couple of Stephen King books that I have avoided on purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's just because that's not the Stephen King that interests me. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, I don't know, I've kind of stayed away. I mean, I do have this curiosity, you know, I've wanted to read them for years, but at the same time, I'm just like,
Yeah, I've heard they're really good, and they get kind of progressively stranger, and they kind of weave all of his books together.
Fan base is definitely dedicated, that's for sure.
I've been hearing them say that they were going to do this movie for a while, and it kept getting like, oh, we're going to do it as partially a TV series and some movies, and it keeps falling apart, and it's just like, really? Seriously, guys, just give this to Peter Jackson. Let him do everything that needs to, you know, he seems to do long, involved fantasy type books into movies really well. Just give it to him, Christ's sake. He gave us, you know, he's got the extended version of The Lord of the Rings, which are like, you know, a fucking 24 hours long total or something ridiculous like that. You know, it's like if you're going to have somebody do this giant epic series of books, give it to someone who has a track record of doing it. Of course, Peter Jackson may not be interested in it, which is probably why he's not been attached to it. Although I seem to think he might have been at one point. I don't remember. If it ever happens, awesome. But at this point, it's seeming less and less likely that we're ever going to see The Dark Tower turn into a movie. Kind of like we were for a while there. You weren't sure if we were going to see the end of the Dark Tower series, period. Because he hadn't finished it, and then he got hit by a car. And then you're like, oh, shit, this may never... Maybe we'll never finish it, but he finally did, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. I agree. Well, something is getting made, and Bruce Campbell has seen it.
Yes.
And Bruce Campbell has things to say.
Yes, he does.
About the Evil Dead remake. So he was interviewed by Digital Spy, and of course what they wanted to talk about was Evil Dead. The V has been dropped from the title. For the remake, that'll, I guess, be easier. But Campbell served as a producer on the Fede Alvarez-directed redo alongside Rob Tapert and Sam Raimi. So, you know, the project was being handled by people who were involved with the original. Mm-hmm. Still, that's not stopping the fans from being upset that the original film is getting an update. And, well, we know we just got finished talking about some remakes, so we know how people, and especially things that they love, that people get angry about it. Mm-hmm. So, but he's, you know, Campbell's aware that we're pissed off. He knows about this, but this is what he had to say. This is what he saw the movie. He saw a rough cut of the movie, and then he had this to say to Digital Spy. We're really excited and really behind it, but it's going to take a bit to get the Evil Dead fans behind it. We know we've pissed a lot of them off. We appreciate that, and we appreciate their anger and their zeal. But the only thing we want to impress upon them is that we didn't screw it up. This is going to be just as memorable as the original Evil Dead without being the same movie. He added he thinks the new film is, quote, fabulous. And, quote, the nice thing is the film looks beautiful. The effects are 10 times better than we ever had access to. And the actors are all better than we were in 1979. Though granted, Sam Raimi is a mad genius, so we got a crazy result like Evil Dead out of this amateur enthusiasm sort of thing. And that was all him, by the way. Jane Levy, Shiloh Fernandez, Jessica Lucas, and Elizabeth Blackmore star in the remake, which faced some rewrites. By Diablo Cody, which that news broke my heart when I originally heard about it. But
yeah, God.
I am not a fan. I'm not going to hold that back. I am not a fan.
Oh, you know? Neither am I. I hate Diablo Cody with a fiery passion. I sat through most of Juno and then shut it off after she did that stupid fucking discussion of Argento. I wanted to fucking reach through the screen and punch the actors and then punch her for writing it. And I know some people are like, oh, Jennifer's Body is good. No, fuck you.
Oh,
I'm not going to watch it because A, Megan Fox sucks.
Oh, you didn't
sucks.
See it?
No.
No, it's
I hate
not
Megan
good.
Fox and I hate Diablo Cody and her terrible fucking dialogue. She's trying hard to be Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
But she can't back it up because she's just writing.
Have tools.
Yeah, exactly. She's writing shitty dialogue with shitty situations. So no.
Yeah, I mean, it's really in Jennifer's Body, the dialogue is so bad. There's no character development for Megan Fox. She's a bitch to begin with, and all she does is turn into a, you know, oh nope, she's still a bitch. So I don't really see exactly what that did, you know, to change anything. It's a mess. It is a mess, and I cannot recommend it because it is just, it's a mess. Okay. But
well, it's one of those I've heard people go, it's good, and no.
It is not.
Diablo Cody's involved. No, sorry, it can't be good.
She says things like, "Oh, you're just Jello. You're lime green Jello," and it makes you want to kick her teeth in.
Yeah.
It really does.
Because nobody talks like that. I'm sorry.
Nope.
I mean,
not unless they've just come out of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You know, some people can point to Tarantino movies and go, well, nobody really talks that way. No, but what they're talking about is at least somewhat relevant to what's, even if it's not exactly relevant to what's going on, it's at least something that you can plausibly hear someone talking about. You know, they may be talking about pop culture in a completely ridiculously, you know, hyper aware sense. But it's at least interesting because the interactions between the characters are interesting. And what they're saying is kind of ridiculous and awesome. And then it's backed up by a great actual storyline everywhere else. So, ugh.
Okay, so that part, we don't like it.
As far as this being, the whole thing about the Evil Dead remake, I know people are pissed. I don't really care. I mean, I like the first, I like all three of them. I'll wait and see. You know, I'm not going to shit on it before I see it. Honestly, it's, you know, I knew it was going to happen because it was like, oh, is it going to be Evil Dead 4? Is it going to be a remake? And everyone's like, oh, well, why isn't Bruce Campbell in it? It's like, because Bruce Campbell's in his like 50s and he's on a successful TV show on USA. He's doing other shit. And that's the other thing I really, that just bugs the fuck out of me is like whenever a remake comes out or a sequel and they're like, oh, well, this person who was involved in this, in it, playing this character's not in it. You know, it's crap. It's like, no, you know, actors get old. They get tired of playing the same fucking character. You know, it's like, I have no problem with Doug Bradley saying, I'm not going to play Pinhead anymore. That's okay. Really. It's okay. He's going to die someday. You know, so Evil Dead remake, it was an interesting story to begin with. I mean, really, that's kind of what carries the movie, is the interesting story. And yeah, the acting is kind of terrible in the first one, but it's got cool effects for its time that still, you know, they still hold up pretty well. I mean, admittedly, the claymation stuff is kind of silly, but, you know, it's an interesting story. And I think that if they're going to do a remake, awesome. They've done it. Bruce Campbell's apparently okay with it, so awesome. You know, I will probably check it out.
Yeah, it does make me feel better that he likes it. You know, I suppose. All right. Well, then, next up, you know the game Plants vs. Zombies.
I do.
Well, next spring, they are sprouting a new sequel.
Yay!
PopCap Games, a division of EA, announced that the underground growth of the sequel to Plant vs. Zombies, one of the world's most popular video games, is germinating and advancing with rigor. The sequel to Plants vs. Zombies is expected to launch by late spring 2013 and will include a bevy of new features, settings, and situations designed to delight the franchise's tens of millions of fans around the world. No other details of the highly anticipated new installment in the franchise are available at this time, beyond the following comments from some of the game's denizens. All right, and those are Spring is ungood time and plants grow dull roots, noted an unidentified spokesperson. So we are meeting you for brains at your house. No worry to plan. And we're free anytime. We'll find you. Okay.
That would be the zombies.
Known for its quirky, one-of-a-kind blend of art, humor, Polish.
Polish.
I know. And attention to detail, PopCap has been a mainstay of casual, mobile, and social gaming for more than a decade. More than a billion people around the world have played PopCap's video games, including the award-winning blockbuster franchises Plants vs. Zombies, Bejeweled, Zuma, Peggle, and Bookworm. The breadth of PopCap's audience is similarly impressive, as its games appeal equally to both genders and all ages. I love Bejeweled. I frequently play that when Mike is rambling on Evil. I just whip out my phone and play Bejeweled and let him go.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I tease him about that, but I don't.
I love Plants vs. Zombies. It's a lot of fun. I've played the Xbox version, which kind of sucks. It's much easier to play on a computer. It's just a lot of fun. You know, it's a really simple kind of puzzle concept where you're basically trying to defend your lawn from zombies, and you have plants that do different things that defend against the zombies, and you know, it's a great way to kill time. It's a lot of fun. I sat for hours playing one of the puzzle game bonus things called Vase Breaker, where you're basically just breaking vases to get plants and keep the zombies from reaching the end of the screen, and it gets progressively harder as you go along. So a sequel I'm really excited about that. I was kind of wondering about if they were going to do a sequel to it, but yes, that's awesome. So hooray!
Okay, well, you know, this is funny because we're covering the Toxic Avenger this week.
Yep.
But the industry tracking website, It's on the Grid, which publishes inside information taken from major agency tracking grids, is reporting that John Travolta has been attached to the Steve Pink-directed reboot of Lloyd Kaufman's The Toxic Avenger. Old Toxie has proven a remarkably resilient figure, having crossed over both to Saturday morning cartoons and live theater, and now they're trying to take him to the mainstream. Which will not work.
Yeah, I've heard that they want to do it as like a PG-13 kind of family comedy thing. It's just like, what? I mean, like, okay, Toxic Crusaders worked because it was like the early 90s and it had the same kind of Captain Planet, you know, anti-pollution thing. And it's like, okay, here, you're taking, it was a fucking Saturday morning cartoon. You know, kids will watch anything. Kids are stupid. You know, I don't think I ever saw it because I was too busy watching Ninja Turtles and other stuff. But yeah, I remember the toys, and they were made by Playmates who made the Ninja Turtle toys. So they looked more or less the same. They were the same size and everything. But I get it. There have been some remakes of trauma movies recently. I think Mother's Day was one that did pretty well. And now, you know, suddenly trauma is like, oh, we're going to remake trauma movies. It's like, what? But why? They're kind of shitty B movies for a reason. They're awesome that way. And
that's perfect. I mean, it's true.
Yeah. you know, John Travolta playing the Toxic Avenger. I hope it's just, you know, a thing that they're talking about that's not going to actually happen. Yeah. This one's going to, I mean, I'm not like, oh my God, you can't remake the Toxic Avenger, but this is going to piss off a lot of people. A lot of people if this actually goes through. So
I just think it's going to be dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, what there's no real point to remaking Toxic Avenger. I mean, I would be much happier with another Toxic Avenger sequel. Like, I'd be happier with Toxic Avenger 5.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because that's apparently Kaufman's work talking about doing that one. So, yes, I will happily take Toxic Avenger 5 over a remake. Or, I wouldn't even mind a remake as long as it's not this, you know, quasi-mainstream thing that they're going to try and make it. So.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Sorry. No, I mean,
yeah.
I don't even, but we're going to be talking about Toxic Avengers soon.
Yes,
so then you'll find out why we think we think it's fine just the way it is. Mm-hmm. I guess. Well, maybe we do.
Maybe.
I don't know. Okay, well, you know, that was a lot of fun, and the news is always it's always our chance to kind of just, I don't know, rant about things, but I have a sad piece of news for the last piece, and most horror fans are aware of this by now, but in case you're not, Tony Scott, who directed The Hunger and, well, a lot more, he committed suicide this week. He was 68 years old, and it turns out that he had inoperable brain cancer, and he also is notably the brother of Ridley Scott. So, but on Sunday, this past Sunday, he jumped to his death from the Vincent Thomas Bridge spanning San Pedro and Terminal Island. Oh, according to the Los Angeles County Coroner's officials, he climbed a fence on the south side of the bridge's apex and leapt off without hesitation around 12:30 p.m. Investigators found a note in Scott's black Toyota Prius, which listed contact information. A suicide note was later found at his office. A spokesman for the Scott family said, "I can confirm that Mr. Scott has indeed passed away. The family asked that their privacy be respected at this time." Scott is known for directing such films as The Hunger, of course, with David Bowie, mm-hmm. Top Gun, Beverly Hills 2, Days of Thunder, Last Boy Scout, True Romance, Crimson Tide, Enemy of the State, Spy Game, Man on Fire, Deja Vu, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, and most recently, Unstoppable. Scott and his older brother Ridley Scott also produced films and such TV dramas as Numbers and The Good Wife. The pair recently wrapped Coma, a 4-hour, 2-night medical thriller starring Ellen Burstyn, set for release next month on A&E. And that Mike and I are going to be covering that movie on Evil Episodes. So I'm looking forward to that, and it breaks my heart now. Period. Scott was married to actress Donna Scott, and they have twin sons. So that was very sad. That made me very sad. But knowing his age, I had a feeling that it was something, and I think a lot of people did, had a feeling that it was something medical, you know, and sadly it was.
Yeah.
So, but we will miss him.
Definitely. And I believe, I know I didn't get the news for it because it happened a little while ago, but Ron Polillo passed away on the 14th.
That's right. That's right. He did. Oh, well, I'm sorry. That kind of got overshadowed.
Yeah.
But that's true. He did. And, horror fans, if you don't know him from anything else, you'll know him from Friday the 13th, Part 6. but everyone else knows him as Horshack.
Yeah.
And that's sad, too.
Yeah, and he also fought Screech in Celebrity Boxing.
Oh, yeah.
For anybody who remembers that nonsense.
But, all right, well, that, you know what, that wraps up the news. I hate to end it on a sad note, but it's a reverent one.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to something fun.
Okay, so with all that done, let's go ahead and get into our It Came From the Instant Queue selection of Poltergeist.
They say every house in America should have an electric chair. And every man just once in his life should sit in it. Just so that he can feel the power of millions of gallons of electricity flow through his veins.
I got an electric chair, that's all I need.
You get an electric chair, Sheldon, you don't have to worry about the audience. You get an electric chair, you can tell them anything you want, as long as it's real.
You get yourself an electric chair and they'll sit there all night long.
Kind of a funny idea, sitting in an electric chair and doing a show.
Well, think of the therapeutic value of an electric chair and all the money you have. Yes, sir, an electric chair in every home.
The Electric Chair, a show about horror. electricchairshow.com.
Electric chair. Wow.
It came from the instant queue.
You're sitting at home and your stomach is bubbling. No food in the fridge and your hunger is growing. You hop in your car and head straight to get drive-through. Murder with fries is described as fast food. To be baked and broiled,
thrown in a pan to be fried in some oil.
Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. This was made in 2006 and was released in 08, 09, I believe. And the synopsis is, what happens when a fast food chicken franchise is built on sacred Native American burial site rife with restless spirits? Zombie chickens. Directed by Lloyd Kaufman, written by Daniel Bova, Gabriel Friedman, and Lloyd Kaufman. This stars Jason Yachin as Arby, who was also in VHS. Kate Graham as Wendy. Alison Serboff as Mickey. Robin L. Watkins as General Lee Roy, Ron Jeremy as Crazy Ron, and Lloyd Kaufman as Mature Arby. I'll let you handle this one first, Jamie. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. You know, I love Troma. Mm-hmm. I want to start off by saying I love Troma. I've always been a fan of Troma. But this one, and it still had some great gags. You know, they always go for sexual humor and body humor, and you know, so they were in their full force with the gags on this one, but I really was disappointed overall, mainly because there what you end up getting are, you know, basically a horde of chicken people that look like the what's his name's character from Kids in the Hall.
I
honestly got kind of bored. I got sidetracked about halfway through. I had to reel myself back in. My mind just started wandering, and then I was like, oh wait, what's happening? And it just failed to hold my attention. I mean, like I said, it did have some funny parts and all that, but I really felt like it was, I don't know, it was just sort of relentless. It was kind of way over the top, and then it was just constantly throwing things at you. Mm-hmm. And to the point where I got bored with how over the top it was. I mean, it just, you know, I just lost interest. Mm-hmm. And then I came back in, and then there was the end, and whatever. I mean, I would probably not watch it again just because I really don't need to. Mm-hmm. And then mainly, there were no zombie chickens. There were no chicken dead. There were some veiny, like, cock-looking eggs that messed people up and caused zombie, I mean, sort of chickeny zombie humans. I don't even know. I think those were
supposed to be the chicken zombies, and there was the kind of chicken zombie that Carl Jr. has attached to him at one point.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's right. But I just wasn't impressed, and it was sad because I'm a big Troma fan, but honestly, I don't know. This is a later film.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of earlier Troma. Mm. I kind of feel like some of the projects, the more recent projects, have lost direction or something. Mm. You know, I mean, it just doesn't feel genuine to me. It doesn't feel raw and gritty like Troma should. Mm. You know, it's, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about it. Sorry, Nick.
I saw this, the first time I saw this was probably 08, 09, shortly after it hit DVD. And I was really excited about it because I'm a big Troma fan. I have I own Lloyd Kaufman's book, Make Your Own Damn Movie, which is probably one of the funniest and most interesting books on filmmaking I've ever read. I also own the Make Your Own Damn Movie box set, which is a set of 5 DVDs, which is, you know, sort of a make your own movie course, which is also hilariously ridiculous from what I've seen of it. I love Troma. I really do. I think Lloyd Kaufman is kind of a mad genius that he's making these schlocky B movies that no one in their right mind should really enjoy, but are just so completely ridiculous and funny that they work.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend actually, she sent me an email earlier that simply said, regarding Troma, the Troma selections, ew. Because she doesn't like Troma movies because they're really gratuitous. They're really excessively, like, goofy and violent and just very juvenile.
None of it bothers me.
No, it's just not her thing. And she's, you know, she doesn't mind gore in, like, you know, most movies, but she's like, yeah, it's too much over the top and Troma. And I was like, okay, I get that. I went into this remembering really enjoying it. I came out of it kind of disappointed. There are moments of it that I thought were really funny. It's always funny to see Lloyd Kaufman acting just because he's fucking hilarious.
Hmm.
There's definitely some message stuff in here about, you know, fast food and all of that, but there's also a lot of just sort of making fun of that same stuff. Like, it's strange because it's like, on the one hand, you can kind of tell that Kaufman is, like, kind of preaching at you, like, you know, fast food's bad and you really shouldn't be doing, you know, you really should be thinking about this stuff. But then at the same time, he's kind of mocking the people who, you know, fight against these corporations and things. So that's kind of this weird battle that's going on in this movie. It's got some funny elements, but some of the stuff just doesn't really work. Paco Bell, the gay, whatever he was, worker at the chicken bunker, he's an okay character. He's funnier when he gets turned into a talking sandwich. Ron Jeremy's only in it for a little bit, which is fine. He has a funny little moment, but then it's over. Really, it's just, it gets kind of tedious as the movie goes on. I mean, the big massacre with all the chicken zombies is funny. Like, that's a really funny sequence. The Carl Jr. character is funny, for the most part. What finally defeats the chicken zombies is obvious, and just sort of like, oh, you know, kind of an eye-rolling, like, oh, boo, sort of solution. But, yeah, it's a movie that I enjoyed the first time I saw it. This time, not so much. I wasn't crazy about the singing, the musical part I remember liking originally, but this time I'm like, ugh.
A couple of the songs were kind of cute.
Yeah.
But, you know, that gets old after a while, yeah. and the performances weren't exactly good, but it's not like,
and even, yeah, that's the thing. It's sort of like it's bad. I mean, it's a Troma movie, so of course it's bad, but it's kind of tedious. You know, it's not as much fun as like Toxic Avenger 4, which is completely ridiculous and absurd and more recent. That I like that one a lot more than I do this one. You know, this one's got a lot of gore and a lot of gross out, and it's funny. But it also just kind of, there's a lot of stuff thrown in there that's kind of like, okay, obviously that's in there, you know. There's lesbians and there's nudity and there's all this stuff, and you're like, yep, this is definitely a trauma movie. And it's kind of like they tried, and I think they did a decent job, but it's just, it's not great, really. You know, it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I made it through it.
Yeah, it's, I don't think I'll watch this again. I might own a copy just to have it in my collection. You know, maybe if I watch it again at some point later on, I might enjoy it, but it's okay. You know, I can't recommend it to everybody. I mean, I can't. I can't recommend trauma movies in good conscience to everyone, because if I recommended some trauma movies to some people, they would probably stop speaking to me.
Right. I mean, it's definitely, it has a niche audience. It's not for the mainstream. No. And you have to be a special kind of animal to enjoy trauma movies. And I am that. Just not particularly this one.
So I would recommend it on the grounds of, if you like trauma or you like kind of bad movies, you'll enjoy this. For
maybe I didn't.
Yeah, you might enjoy it. For me, it was okay. You know, I'd probably give it a 3 out of 5. You know, it wasn't terrible, but you know, it's a 3 in the sense of it's a trauma movie, and there's some hilarious trauma-y stuff in it. But it's, you know, it's a little too over the top, which is kind of weird saying about a trauma movie.
Exactly. So. But I said it too. Yeah. You know, and, you know, there are some trauma-y things in it that are funny, but not enough to save it for me. So I'm going to go for a 2 on this one.
Okay.
Didn't like it. I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it.
Okay.
So it's a 2.
That's not bad. So that's it for Poltergeist. It is available on Netflix if you want to check it out. Be forewarned, it is gross. It is gross.
Yeah, it is. And that doesn't bother me either. I mean, it's just like all these things separately don't bother me, you know. But I usually enjoy them, you know. I love gratuitous nudity just as much as the next person, possibly more than a lot of them. But I do love my gratuitous nudity. But yeah,
this just doesn't quite gel.
It just doesn't. It just is a mess.
Yeah.
To me, it was all over the place, and it was, you know, you couldn't really rein it in. So I found myself wandering around, just like I feel like the movie did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for Poltergeist. We'll be right back with The Toxic Avenger.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
Of all history's prophets, none has a greater degree of credibility than H.G. Wells, with his predictions of moon landings, ray guns, sonic signaling devices. Is Wells right again in his prediction of dangers to come in Empire of the Ants? In this fantastic tale, Wells tells the chilling story of a colony of ants who feed on atomic waste, causing them to grow into large, voracious monsters.
Kyle, let's get out of here! Come on!
And these giant ants are actually able to control humans.
He needs us. That's why it has to be this way. Why we must obey. At first, the people don't understand. They must be forced into submission. After their indoctrination, they realize that the ants only want us to take care of them and...
Wanna talk tough movies? Here's a superhero with the biggest pair of all.
You looking for me?
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
This Elvira is a slimy, slithering succubus, a concubine, a streetwalker, a tramp.
Yes, she's got it all. She's everything you've ever wanted in a movie. A woman. And a casserole. You'll see lots of weird romance.
What's that perfume you're wearing?
Super unleaded. Don't smoke.
Loads of drooling madness.
Ew, I hope you changed the sheets.
Hey, Elvira, we got us a couple more volunteers.
Great, just grab a tool and start banging.
A whole gang of awesome monsters.
I'm fast,
Jamal, you know it.
And a few sleazy experiments.
I'm hurt. I'm hurt. She's mad.
There's nothing wrong with G-rated movies as long as there's lots of sex and violence.
The charge is witchcraft.
We ought to have one of these every year.
See Elvira as Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
But if they ever ask about me, tell them I was more than just a great set of...
It's the greatest double feature of all time.
And now our feature presentation.
Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
Yeah, I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I wanna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste. Yes, the muggers and the rapists didn't know what law and order was until the Toxic Avenger came to town.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, everybody, drop your tacos or I'll blow your brains out.
The vandals and the perverts had their way with the little people of Tromaville until the Toxic Avenger ripped them apart. The Toxic Avenger. His face is so terrifying. We can't show it to you now. You'll have to see the movie for yourself. The Toxic Avenger can bend steel with his bare hands.
Oh, we're only kidding. Get it?
Leap small cars in a single bound. He crushes drug pushers. Smashes hit and run drivers. And gives all criminals their just desserts. The Toxic Avenger.
He was a hero.
He's a hero. He's a fighter. He's a lover.
Well, Melvin, you're beautiful.
The good citizens love him. The fat and corrupt hate him.
Kill that bastard for me. You gotta kill him.
Yeah.
Will he survive? For incredible explosive action, you must see the Toxic Avenger. He's a different kind of hero. Toxic Avenger is coming to your town. Look out.
The Toxic Avenger was released in 1984, and the synopsis is, Tromaville has a monstrous new hero. The Toxic Avenger is born when mop boy Melvin Junko falls into a vat of toxic waste. Now evildoers will have a lot to lose. This is directed by Michael Herz and Lloyd Kaufman, written by Joe Ritter, based on a story by Lloyd Kaufman. Stars Andre Miranda as Sarah, Mitch Cohen as the Toxic Avenger, Jennifer Pritchard as Wanda, Cindy Mannion as Julie, Robert Pritchard as Slug, Gary Schneider as Bozo, and Mark Torgel as Melvin Junko. We're kind of going to spoil this, but not going to throw in a spoiler warning, because really there's, even if we spoil the entire movie, you kind of have to see it to believe it, so just there's that. I first saw Toxic Avenger, I want to say maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I picked it up at a video store that there was an independent video store in my town that had it. And I think this was around the time I'd already seen Cannibal the Musical. So I was kind of aware of Trauma and was kind of interested in it. And I think I'd read, I was reading Make Your Own Damn Movie. So I picked up Toxic Avenger, I put it in, and I got about 15, 20 minutes in and ended up turning it off because, like, this is shit. I came back to it a couple years later. And I sat down and watched it and laughed my balls off. This movie is fucking ridiculous, and I love it. It's schlocky and silly and gory as hell. I actually own the 21st Anniversary Edition, which is the unrated director's cut. I'm not sure what the difference between the R-rated cut and the unrated director's cut is, other than I think you get more of the head-smashing sequence when they hit the kid on the bike. And it's a funny, fun movie. It's, you know, you've got Bozo and Gonzo are these two fucking, or Bozo and, yeah, was it Bozo and Gonzo? Yeah. They're these two fucking ridiculous meathead characters. And Melvin's a mop boy at the Tromaville, health club, and Tromaville is the toxic waste capital of the world or of the US or something like that. And, you know, Gonzo and Bozo and their girlfriends go out, driving, and they hit people, and they've got points like in Death Race, which is pretty funny. And anyway, they Melvin's kind of this nerdy character, nerdy guy who's kind of always getting in their way, and so they decide to play a prank on him, and he accidentally flies out the window in a what was it, like a pink outfit and a tutu. Yeah, and he goes flying out the window, and this truck with open canisters of toxic waste is parked right outside while the two drivers just huff coke out of giant bags.
More coke than you've ever seen in your life. I mean, it looks like they had a powdered donut bite.
It's like the end of Scarface when he just sits up, his face is covered in white. Yeah, it's pretty much that. And so he falls into this toxic waste, and he becomes the Toxic Avenger, a superhuman size and strength, and he becomes the superhero of Tromaville. And this movie is so politically incorrect and just terrible and gory and violent and ridiculous that it's a lot of fun. I mean, and there's kind of the basic, and that's basically the story, is that Toxie is this hero. He's fighting bad people, and the mayor of the town is corrupt, and Toxie falls in love with this blind woman who he saves from a taco store that's being held up by a gang of wackos.
It's called the Mexican
place. The Mexican place, thank you. And one of the greatest lines in movie history uttered, where one of the villains says, "I've always wanted to cornhole me a blind bitch," which is great. But yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous. And it's, I love this movie. It's a lot of fun.
Well, hell yeah. I mean, this is legendary. Mm-hmm. And Toxie has always been one of my heroes. He's got that great voice. You know me? That's exactly me. I was like, yes, it's look, but he's, I don't know. He looks like Jason without his mask, and he's wearing a fused on tutu.
Yeah.
But, you know, just, I don't care. Talk to me, baby. he's badass and he's a good guy and you can't help but love him. And, everyone gets what's coming to him. Mm-hmm. Plus there's, you know, masturbation scene. There's a sex scene in the very beginning though, but, and don't cash out your chips on that one, because that girl, I swear, took classes at the same sex school where Allie from, Sleepaway Camp 2 went. I mean, it was terrible, but, you know, whatever. There's, you know, a lot of violence, some really cool death gags in this one. It's just way over the top, but in a good way. And it's just, you know, several oohs, you know, like with the fingers to the eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Or the running over the head, or just really some really cool, fun shit in this movie. Yeah. And this was, Toxie is what made me just such a fan of Trauma in general.
Yeah.
And
they've said, you know, Lloyd Kaufman has been very open that Toxie is the cash cow of Trauma.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is. Well, if you see the Trauma logo, you will see Toxie.
Exactly.
And there's a reason for that. And, I mean, he's like their, you know, their thing. There's a word for it, but
mascot.
Yes. Thank you.
He and Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Oh, I love Sergeant. You know, and a lot of people don't like Sergeant Kabuki Man. I do like that one.
I know. That is a terrible fucking movie, but it's a hilarious
one. Of course,
one.
But it's fun. And see, this is like, I love, you know, Beware Children at Play, Rabid Grannies. What are some others on there?
Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yeah. Terror Firmer.
Terror Firmer is amazing.
I love Terror Firmer. That is incredible. I think I watched that one. I rented it when it came out and watched it at least two times back to back. It might have been three because I just really loved it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I'm a huge Trauma fan. I love Trauma. But then when I tell you that I wasn't crazy about Poltergeist, it's not because I don't like harsh humor or I don't like, you know, sexist things or, well, I mean, I don't really like sexist things, but gratuitous things are just fine. I don't have a problem with these things. It's just that, Toxie does it way better than Poltergeist did. And it was so right smack in the middle of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything from the music to the wardrobe, the lingo, it was.
I mean, and the acting is so
like
over
a
the top.
Time. Oh, yeah. It was like a time capsule. Mm-hmm. And I love this, you know, there are little sounds here and there, like anytime anyone gets thrown somewhere or whatever, you'll hear like the little stock sounds.
Yeah.
People are always doing that what look, you know, with that incredulous face and things that are happening. And
whenever
so...
Toxie's running, you hear Night on Bald Mountain.
Yes. And it's so cheesy and wonderful.
Oh, my God. It really is. And it's so ridiculous because you actually don't see Toxie's face till about 45 minutes into the movie.
That's right.
Because he transforms and we kind of see him mid-transformation, and we see him as he's kind of running around in the distance, but we don't actually see him up close.
Yeah, you see him from behind. Mm-hmm. You see him from, you know, he'll turn his head, but they
and
don't.
It's not until I think he kills I don't think it's during the taco. Oh, maybe it is during the taco.
Yeah, it's when he leans down to
That's
to help
right,
the
when he saves Sarah. That's right. And surprisingly, like, she's probably the best actress in this movie. And this
she was
like,
really cute.
Yeah, she's the only one. She's like, this is like the only movie she's ever done, which is really sad because she was actually really good. But yeah, Gonzo and Bozo are ridiculous. Their girlfriends are absurd.
How about that blonde chick that can't keep her mouth closed? I mean, like, her mouth is just always, she's grinning from ear to ear about everything, and I don't understand it. There is one thing I want to clarify, though. Someone told me when I mentioned that we were going to be doing some Trauma movies, someone told me that they were not a Trauma fan, and they also heard that in Toxic Avenger, you know, the dog got shot for real.
Please.
I'm guessing that they probably didn't check for sure since they're not a Trauma fan. They didn't actually watch the movie to see for sure.
Yeah.
But I would just like to reassure them that dog is so not dead.
The dog is breathing when they're supposed
to be
dead. The dog
is breathing.
And
yeah.
The makeup is so absurdly bad.
Yeah. That dog did not get shot. Never fear. The dog was fine.
Yeah,
he's dead now.
Well, yeah.
But odds are, but.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Lloyd Kaufman is actually like a supporter of PETA. Which is really bizarre because if you watch some Trauma DVDs, they have like a PETA little like support videos like as Easter eggs. It's like, what the fuck? And Kaufman has said that he's not, you know, he's against animal cruelty in his book and stuff. He's all like, he said, you know, don't use animals and don't use kids because they're both a pain in the ass. But yeah, this is one of those kind of great low budget exploitation movies that has just, it knows exactly how to draw the audience in. It's got violence. It's got nudity left and right. It's got gore. It's got great action sequences. It's a long-ass car chase where Toxie is fighting with Gonzo and Bozo, and he's, like, you know, attached. He's on the roof of their car, and they're, like, screaming around, like, New Jersey, wherever the fuck they were. And it's just, oh, man. It's such a wonderfully cheesy movie, you know, and you kind of, you grow to really like Toxie because he's a good guy and he's, you know, trying to help the town and the townsfolk love him and, you know, the mayor hates him because the mayor is corrupt. You've got the Nazi cop who's just so ridiculous and there's no real explanation of why he is the way he is. He's just there.
Mein Mayor.
Yeah. And Cigar Face actually shows up in Toxic Avenger 4 as the Nazi cop. In that one, it's the best way I can describe Toxic Avenger is it's like an 80s underground comic book, very heavy on sex and violence and ridiculously over the top, but also basically a superhero story. You know, it's very much, it's your standard superhero story because, you know, Toxie's, you know, he gets these powers and he's going and helping people. But it's also got, you know, over-the-top violence, over-the-top gore, ridiculous amounts of sex and nudity, lots and lots of language, you know. It's just, I love it. I really do.
Oh, it's offensive on every possible level. I mean, it just in the first few minutes, one of the girlfriends rattles off about 6 or 7 different racial slurs, which, you know, is hilarious. But I mean, it's beautiful in the fact that back then we didn't worry about shit like that. Back then there was no such thing as PC.
Yeah.
And you pretty much did whatever you wanted to do. And then if people got offended, well, fuck them. They got offended.
Yeah.
So people like Kaufman had balls. You know, it took a lot of balls to make a movie like this.
Yeah.
And, I just don't know. I mean, now maybe that's the problem. Maybe trauma movies just aren't the way that they used to be because they can't be. Because this has, there's nothing really shocking about it anymore.
We were just talking about Citizen Toxie off the air, and that's that movie pushes a lot of buttons, and that movie is still pretty offensive.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, but I mean, like, that's not like crazy recent. It's not like yesterday, you know. But I mean, like, with, say, for instance, Poltergeist, that was just a few years ago.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's why it's such a mess, because they're, you know, in order to keep pushing boundaries, you just have to push farther and farther and farther. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure, but I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Yeah.
But back when Toxie was made, the Monster Hero.
Yes.
it took a lot. I mean, in one movie, they're mowing down children and, you know, masturbating, and which back then you couldn't even say the word masturbate. You know, I mean, it just, we've come a long way, baby. but anyway, you know, it pushed the envelope and crossed a lot of boundaries and pissed off a whole lot of people, but in a really good way.
Oh, yeah.
A whole lot of fun.
Yes, this is easily one of my favorite trauma movies. It is funny. It holds up amazingly well.
Oh, yeah. The humor is still right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still enjoy the gore scenes, which, by the way, look just as good as a lot of movies out there today do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So. Hell yeah, I recommend this.
Yeah. This is one that's like...
To a trauma fan, to someone who... Or a fan of those things that could be construed as offensive.
Yeah.
If you don't mind it, you know, if maybe you get a kick out of being naughty every now and again... then I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, if you like kind of schlocky, cheesy movies, you'll probably enjoy this. Really, any of Troma's stuff from the late 70s, early 80s, or the 80s, really, is just kind of all... It's all like this. It's schlocky and bad and just wonderfully offensive. And that's kind of what's great about it, is that it's just Lloyd Kaufman is this crazy little Jewish guy with a bow tie who's like your zany uncle.
I frequently think that Lloyd Kaufman and Mel Brooks might have been separated at birth.
You know what? I think so.
Lloyd Kaufman is like the left side evil
yes.
twin.
You know? Yes. And
Mel Brooks is, you know, he keeps it a little bit more mainstream, I guess.
Yeah.
Brooks
is the slightly more, you know, fun, is the straight-laced, a little bit more... politically correct, a little bit more, a little smarter in some cases with his jokes. Kaufman just goes for the obvious, you know, kind of body humor and stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that, because goddamn it, these movies are hilarious. And yeah, it's just Kaufman is just he's such a funny character in and of himself. Like, you sit and watch interviews with him, and he's just so animated, and he's out of his mind. And it's funny, because like I said, I read Make Your Own Damn Movie, and he talks about how to run a set as a director, and you've got, I think it was Trent Haga or maybe James Gunn, one of those two, were doing like asides throughout the book, and they're like, yeah, Lloyd is a fucking tyrant on set. But then you look and you see what he's produced, and you're like, okay, yeah, it makes sense that he'd have to be a tyrant on set to be able to get this to work, because, you know, you're working with little to no budget, and you're producing movies that look pretty goddamn good. So I would definitely recommend this to people who like, you know, kind of bad movies, who can enjoy campy cult movies like this. Definitely check it out.
Please don't let them ever change the leader, you know, where they have that great, the skyscrapers,
the skyline, and
trauma, and the music that sounds just a little bit muffled. You know, please don't ever fix that because I love it so much. It makes me happy.
Yes.
And incidentally, I own Toxic Avenger. However, I chose to watch it on Netflix because it was there and that's easier. and so for anyone who wants to watch it on Netflix, the interesting, how did you watch it?
I broke out the DVD.
Oh, nice. Well, on Netflix, the version on Netflix has the introduction that Lloyd Kaufman did for the Laserdisc release.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's kind of a fun little, he catches up with Toxie now in Hell's Kitchen. Well, this was actually not now by any means. It was about 2000.
Okay, because, yeah, I've got the 21st anniversary edition where he's throwing a party for he's saying, you know, oh, it's Toxie's birthday, and, you know, he's introducing that there's going to be all the special features on the disc, because it's two disc, and how, you know, Toxie's his cash cow, and then Toxie comes in and tells him he's gay, and he yells at Toxie for being gay, and then Toxie leaves with his boyfriend, and then Kabuki Man comes in, and he's like, fuck you, Kabuki Man, nobody likes you!
Well, you'll probably get a kick out of this. Go back and watch the beginning so you can see the introduction. It involves a Kabuki Man blowjob joke. I mean, what more do I have to say?
Awesome. Oh, I love Kabuki Man so much. It's a terrible fucking movie, but god damn it, that character is wonderful. And it's really because he's become kind of the ass end of all of so many jokes at Troma because that movie failed so miserably. And he becomes such a great character in Citizen Toxie that's where I was like, oh my god, this character is wonderful. So Toxic Avenger is definitely worth checking out if you like kind of schlocky bad movies. We both really love it. And I'm definitely going to check out the sequels. 2 and 3 and 4 are all on Netflix. I've seen 4. Citizen Toxie is fucking hysterical. I have not seen 2 and 3 yet, but I will. And actually, there's a ton of Troma movies available on Netflix Instant. So if you enjoy Troma movies or you want to check out more of them, search them out on Netflix. They are available. So with all that, we're going to go ahead and close the show in just a second.
See, I'm just going to keep recording this stuff over and over and over again, like I do with the show that I run called Motion Picture Massacre. It's kind of an easy show to get around. I do a feedback section, a what I watch section, and I talk about two films. I don't really review things. I kind of talk about them in my own way. I spit out the things that I think are interesting, and I hopefully, with what I'm saying, you will go out and check out the films that I'm talking about. Because that's pretty much the only way I know how to do this. It's kind of the same way I've been doing it since I was in high school. So I hope you like it. The films I talk about mostly are horror and cult films, mostly in those kind of genres, space films, 70s pornos, giallos, Japanese monster movies, Japanese vomit disgusting movies, Canadian vomit gore films. Anything that's kind of in that realm of weirdness, I guess you could say. And yeah, if you want to check it out, motionpicturemassacre.com.
All right, that is it for episode 28. Next week, we will be doing Empire of the Ants for our It Came from the Instant Queue, and for our feature presentation, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, which I have not seen since, shit, a long-ass time ago. Oh, man, that was a long fucking time ago I saw that movie.
Yeah, love it. That's one of my, I watch it fairly regularly and quote it a hell of a lot. So, pardon me, is this face taken?
Yeah, Creepy Kitsch did an episode about it some time ago that they were just raving about it. And I was like, I should watch that again. And then I didn't. But now I'm going to.
Now you're gonna.
Yep.
So yeah, look forward to that.
Yes. Contact information's in the show notes as always. Call us, email us, tweet us.
Let us know you're out there, loves. As usual, I would love to thank everyone for listening to us, whether you found us by accident or you sought us out. I appreciate you lending us your ears. And if you can hear my voice right now, that means you got through the whole thing. And that's even better.
Yes.
So we love you so much. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to pretty much to everybody who listens. You know, you guys are awesome. We really appreciate that you're enjoying the show. Thank you for the kind comments on Facebook. Even when an episode goes up that I'm not crazy about, because I've had a couple of them where I'm just like, oh, this episode kind of sucks. And everyone's just like, oh, yeah, it was another great show. I was like, really? I wasn't happy about that one, but okay, awesome. So, yeah, we'll be back next week. And that's about it. We're going to go ahead and get the hell out of here and probably talk about what we're going to plan to do for our Halloween specials when we get to that point. So, Have a nice week, everybody, and we'll be back next week.
See you later.
Bye, everybody.
You and me, Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD. I'll party with you. After all, it's my 10th anniversary.
Fuck you, Kabuki Man. Nobody likes you.
Kabuki Man cries.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave, at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at DDelamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.